Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode. And today we have Mayank from Content Ninja, and they help companies with their technology and content problems. And they're running an agency of about 35 team members, as well as a whole horde of content writers that I'd love to talk more about. And welcome to the show, Mayank.
Thanks for having me here, Andrew. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a bit about Content Ninja. What do you guys do? What are you all about? And how big is your your team? And are you all in one area, or is it dispersed? What does that look like?
Sure. So as you said, right, we're essentially 30 to 40 folks at the company in terms of the full-time folks, as well as the writers, freelancers, and part-timers that we have. The kind of work that we do tends to be the way that we love to describe ourselves is that we solve complex marketing challenges for tech-driven businesses. And essentially what that means is that we focus on companies where the product that they're trying to sell, there's a certain decision cycle that's involved there, where these are rarely consumer products, but something like, I'd say enterprise software or a fintech product, where you have to really cater to your prospects need every step of the way. And when it comes to this, when it comes to building the right kind of content that can target your prospects at every stage of their journey, that's something that we're very comfortable doing in all formats, as well as across different channels. So that's essentially what we do at Content Ninja. We have a host of enterprise clients in India, as well as mid-size and startups across the world. As you asked about the team, our team's actually fairly remote. So we have maybe, I'd say, 20% of the team based out of Delhi, India, out of which I think roughly maybe 30 to 40% probably come to the office a couple days a week. But most of our team's remote, and we've been remote for a large part of our journey, even without the pandemic completely throwing a wrench in our plans.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. And that's, you're solving interesting problems. Like whenever you start looking at one, content runs the internet. Without content, there is no internet, literally. But then the automation element too, that is so important in the follow-up process to start landing these sales with these more complex life cycles. Now, I know you use HubSpot, for example, but the one, I think the age old issue with automation is what should be done by the sales rep or the entrepreneur or whoever is managing the prospect, and what should be done by the automation. Is there a specific handoff point? Like, is that kind of what you guys are working on? Because I imagine that would be a consideration, especially if somebody's using HubSpot, where it's like it might be their email automation, but it might also be their CRM.
So let me get this right. You're essentially asking that what's that boundary between where X should definitely be done by a person versus where you should probably automate it?
Yeah. Like, what is your take? Or maybe is it a mix of both? Like, what's your opinion on that?
So I think marketing at any stage, it has to be personalized. Regardless of the extent of automation that you do, you have to have very specific messages that cater to specific audiences. You need to be very pointed in terms of what value you're offering to someone. You're not living in an age where you can send one cold email to one entire list and expect good returns. It's just something that will probably negatively impact your spam scores. But the one thing that I love about marketing automation is that it takes, it really cuts the distance that exists right now between thought and execution. And when you have to execute something like a mass email campaign to say a list, you want 6 to 7 different emails going, you want certain conditions there that if a person say opens an email, then send them this. If they do not, then probably keep them there and then reach out to them later on in the stage. A lot of this does not need to be with a person. You don't need to, I feel that the number of hours that a lot of folks spend at companies that are not leveraging marketing automation, right, where they're just spending a number of hours keeping track of things and trying to do something as, I'd say, I don't want to use the word menial, but essentially something as manpower driven, such as creating reports or deciding which emails to send. I think like you should probably look at cutting out all of that time. Like that's man hours that you could be spending planning your next move rather than just trying to get those emails out.
I love that. That's a great point. So kind of where the intersection would come then is you're nurturing the leads, you're helping them get to a point where they're ready to talk to the business, and then they respond to that email, and then that's where a salesperson or whoever would step in. Is that correct?
Definitely. I mean, getting that intent right is, I think, super important. But I'd also probably ask folks to be a bit wary about that. You don't want someone who's just downloaded maybe one white paper to suddenly be getting calls from your sales teams. Because, I mean, I know that folks want those leads. You need those leads to be sent out to your sales team so that you have maybe a bit more control there. But you're just completely mucking up the intent cycles then. You really want folks to be further down the decision cycle. You want to make sure that they've already gone through a certain amount of your content before you know for a fact that they're ready for you to reach out. And that's when your sales team should be reaching out to them in, and again, in a personalized manner, not in a templatized email sort of format.
That makes sense, because that is kind of annoying whenever you're like curious about something and then somebody tries to sell you something and it's like, I'm not there, right? Calm down.
Exactly.
I love that, man. That's really cool. And then, so you have quite the team behind you. That's no easy feat to grow a company to the level that you've grown it. I'd love to talk a bit about that. Before we do though, just for a bit of context, are you working with brands across the globe? Are you working mostly in India? Like, what does your client base look like?
Across the globe mostly. So when it comes to India, we're generally focused on enterprises where folks are willing to essentially, we're very proud of the quality of work that we do. So in India, we generally work with folks who are willing to pay a premium for the kind of value they get. Mm-hmm. But I would say a very large majority of our revenues comes from the US. So we have a number of enterprises and as well as startups based out of the US who we're working with. And these are a large chunk of these are generally folks in deep tech domains such as AI, machine learning, geospatial navigation. And similarly, we have a few clients based out of Singapore as well, a few deep tech clients, as well as some VC firms.
Gotcha. I love that. That's cool. And in terms of you and the way you grow your business, how do you go about landing clients in other locations? Do you bring on team members that are familiar with that territory, or are like, do you have people who are connecting with prospects and landing sales from India? Like, what does that look like?
No easy answer there, to be honest. I mean, I'd say that almost all of our sales so far has been through inbound. And that's one of the reasons why we're such big fans of HubSpot as well. But the process has been, I mean, of course, like any business, it starts out with word of mouth. But one of the advantages that we had was that you have a lot of folk in the US, right? And a large chunk of them are also Indians who are working at technology companies. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that these folks are always looking for, the way it started out was that these folks were looking for cost-effective yet effective, essentially, solutions from countries like India, Philippines, Nigeria, out of Africa, places like these. And while their earlier goals was, how do we outsource maybe just some amount of SEO writing? The big advantage that we had was our website. So our, this is something that we really push for, is that your website is your pitch deck in this current age. And you need to be sure that when someone goes through that, it gives the right impression. So what happened was that a lot of folks who went through it, they realized that we were far more than just folks who wrote some blogs. We were folks who could be their strategic partners. And the kind of conversations it initiated and the kind of reviews that we got based on those early engagements, I'd say that really, first of all, it pivoted our business. We were then far more focused on the US audiences, as well as finding folks in our network who we could hire, who could do that quality of work. And second, these folks had their own network. And honestly, it's a gap that's there in the market. It's that you're always looking for good folk who can do the work you want, and folk who can do are always looking for clients. So it's like the hiring hiree paradox that just exists. But this essentially gave us a good connect. It got us in those networks, and a lot of folks recommended us to their other friends, other folks, other colleagues in their networks and things like that. And I'd say that's something that really started building up that traffic. And over time, what we did was we started optimizing our site. We started focusing on the right kind of keywords that we wanted to, that our prospects and target customers were looking for. And that's how I think we really started working with these international audiences a lot more. At this point, I'd say that we're essentially just focused on building the right kind of content. And most of the folks that reach out to us, they just open our website, open the form and reach out, which is, I'd say, it's a very good place to be honest.
I love that. So you're, in terms of you handling your sales, you find phone calls are a way that that happens?
So generally how this works, the way that it flows for our agency is that folks fill out a form. They say that, hey, this is what we're looking for. We get a better idea about of the needs over email, and then we schedule a call.
Gotcha. Okay.
And over the first, I think, couple calls, that's a fair amount of time for us to realize if we're the right fit for them or not.
Yeah, that's smart, because that's half of sales, right? Just talking to the right people and not talking to the wrong people. I love that. One thing you touched on, I think, is so important when it comes to building a business, and it's leveraging your strengths, right? Where you have the strength of, like, you have an advantage with the purchasing power, right? Where it's like companies in the US can save money by hiring a company out of India, for example, right? But meanwhile, you've kind of laid that up, and I don't know if you're running that model to this day or what, but if you compare that to maybe a company that offers the same thing that's running out of like Los Angeles in California, there's probably going to be a difference in price there, right? And then the thing that I really love that you said, and you kind of passed on it very quickly, but I'd love to hear more about this, where you are, and I don't know how much of this is still part of your strategy, but you mentioned that there are a lot of people from your culture that are working in the US in prospective companies. Now, would you actively reach out to them? Like maybe somebody who's like in the IT department or whatever, and or the marketing department, and go through that? Or did you find it was more organic, where they would specifically start looking for solutions in your country?
In most cases, I can't recall of an instance where we specifically focused on trying to find, say, other Indian folks in the US and reaching out to them. In most cases, people from different companies reached out. And it's just one of the reasons why I brought this up was that we noticed that there was, I'd say that folks from India were just a lot more comfortable experimenting with international agencies. And because they already knew the culture, they already had a few friends who were already in the country, so they could ask around and figure out how do they find the right kind of marketing team for them or the content team for them. So that was one of the reasons early on. But right now, I think overall, almost, I think across companies, folks are getting more and more comfortable with remote teams. Mike Lieberman, for example, he runs an agency out of the US. And we've been talking to a lot of agency owners across the globe, and they've been talking about how their entire teams are currently remote. So folks might just have a few client-facing folks in the same country, and the entire marketing backend could be run by someone completely different. And that's perfectly fine. As long as you're getting the kind of value that you need, I think that's a great way to grow your business.
I think so too, 100%. And I think it was approached, it still is, but not so much. But for a while, and maybe it's just more beginners that approach it this way, they think that by hiring people in remote areas around the world, such as India or the Philippines or Africa or like wherever, right? That they should only be paying like a few dollars an hour or something, right? Mm. And then basically what you get from that is a really bad experience, right?
Yeah.
And and then typically those people will say, oh no, it's not worth it, we have to hire locally and whatever. And it's just not true, right? Like we leverage developers out of the Ukraine anytime we need any like heavy duty web development done, right? Mm-hmm. And they're $35 an hour, right? Which is like not a lot, but it's like for a salary over there, it's a lot of money. And for a lot of people, they won't think to drop that much money on an hourly wage for a developer. But meanwhile, you're getting the best of the best for $35 an hour. Whereas if you were to hire that in the States, you're looking at like $150 an hour, right? And even if you're going less than that, like you can get legitimate teammates, full-time people on for significantly less. But I think as far as an agency goes, it's important to make sure that you're not being hindered by the communication barrier, right? Like, I'd be curious to see how your teams run. Like, do you have certain people in the company where it's like, it's very important to be like being able to be fluent or almost fluent in certain languages? And I'd be curious, do you have other team members who they only know their local dialect?
So I'll touch upon both these things, right? And like when we started out, this was definitely one of the more painful engagements where even folks living in, say, Europe, US, were looking to hire folks in India for a pittance and expecting very high value of work. And I'd say that early on, we tried that, we explored that, but it's just when you're easily replaceable, that's a very bad business case to be in. Mm. So that's, again, that's where I go back to my website and see that was, I think, a very big differentiator where folks going through it could very clearly see that these guys know their stuff. This is not, because that's the thing, right? When someone's reaching out to, say, people in India for non-development work, essentially, you have certain expectations that the quality of English that these folks speak might not be at par. I probably can't take that to say a prospect of mine in an enterprise, in a tech enterprise, and have them go through that content. But that's the kind of mindset that we had to change. That's what we had to fight against. And that's where I say that the website becomes the best pitch, is that as soon as folks went through it, they had a very clear idea that these guys can speak our language. They can be the kind of digital chameleons that we want them to be. Mm-hmm. And over time, where we sort of scaled up in a way where we're essentially getting dedicated marketing experts for these companies. So we have technology, medical technology, finance technology, enterprises in the US reaching out to us and asking us to set up a marketing team for them that can work as their own employees, where we're managing the back office, but they're the ones who are hiring them and they're the ones who are onboarding them and doing everything there. Mm. Because it's just, over time, what's happened is that there is this specialized marketing expertise that's here that companies abroad can tap into, and it's becoming more and more visible day by day. And I'm sorry, I forgot the second question. You asked another thing after that, right?
I love that, man. I think you honestly answered everything. I think that's really, really interesting. Now, in terms of like where your focus is on a day-to-day basis, where where does it go, right? So you have the automation technical aspects of the company, you have the quality control of the content. I imagine that's really important. You have the management of the clients, you have the sales processes, you got to manage your employees. How do you make sure all that's done effectively? What processes do you have in place to stay on top of things?
Sure. So I think there have been two core things that have really helped us drive this through. One has been that, so my co-founder and I have very different styles of working. She's someone who's a manager through and through, who's a great manager who can make sure that she's on top of a lot of projects, as well as that she can make other folks do the right kind of work there. And I, on the other hand, am a far more of a doer, where I have a, I'd say, a decent amount of expertise across fields when it comes to marketing, writing content, even doing a bit of website development and such. Mm-hmm. Just my background with technology makes it very comfortable for me. And these kind of contrasting skill sets just really helped us in the early stages of our journey. The second thing that we realized was the sheer impact that a good second-tier leadership could make in your company. And what we've been trying to do is make sure that we're focusing more on growth-driving activities rather than on the agency day-to-day, for which we have a very strong second-tier leadership that's set up in our company. And as you said, right, process over here is very important. We try to make sure that we're documenting every single thing that we're aiming to do. We're trying to make sure nothing slips through the cracks. And we found that having company-wide as well as individual level OKRs are a great way to proceed with this. So that's generally the kind of approach we take. We use a project management tool. We use ClickUp essentially to ensure that we're all in sync, especially when you have such a large remote team. I'd say that's definitely one of the challenges that took us some time to figure out. But yeah, essentially it's having the right kind of second tier leadership that can free you up so that you can focus far more on those, on either sales or on company growth, on figuring out what are the next steps, what else do you want to do with your agents.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then in terms of, so you mentioned a second tier leadership team. So It's you and your co-founder. And then what does that next tier look like? Like, what are the titles of these people or this person?
So we're, honestly, that's something we've been working on and trying to come up with those fancy titles. But I'll just give you a rough idea about the kind of work they do, right?
So yeah, that works.
We have I would say there are three folks who I'd say are really core to what we're doing. And the three kind of roles that they've taken up very naturally are that one is of an operations manager. And our ops head is also fantastic when it comes to HubSpot. So any kind of HubSpot onboarding and making sure that the day-to-day operations of the agency are going on fine, that whenever something explodes on a client, he's there to make sure that we can fix things, we can reallocate folks. That's the kind of role that our ops head takes up. The second is a chief people officer. And this is something that was that took us a while to figure out, because we always thought that culture is something that sort of organically develops. And we were way off on that. I mean, it's just when it comes to company culture, it's something that you have to actively work towards, where you have to actively be talking to different folks. And that's something that our chief people officer, so to speak, he has that in the bag. Like, he's got a very good handle on that. And the third thing is our design head, who essentially takes care of things such as how is our design bandwidth allocated, because when it comes to content, we're very focused on working across channels. So making sure that we have the right kind of bandwidth, that we're exploring the right things with upcoming videos, other channels, the right kind of practices for setting up the right webinars, things like that. That's the kind of, I'd say, design thinking and strategy that our designer sort of brings in. So I'd say these are the three folks that are a part of our core team and of that Slacker Slack group that I think every company has. which was very creative when we thought about it, but turns out not so much. But yeah, so that's essentially what our second tier leadership at Content Ninja looks like.
Awesome, I love that. And then if we were to think through as another tier, and then would the next tier kind of be like all the different kind of clusters of people that specialize in the various aspects of the technical elements of the company?
So the way that I'd say the company structured beyond that exists in the form of flexible pods, because what we tried to do early was to have the design team separate, have the content team separate, have the marketers separate, and have maybe specific folks aligned towards specific projects. And that just doesn't work, because you always have, I'd say, fluctuating bandwidths when it comes to these projects. So we're flexible there, but what happens is that we have inbound marketing experts that are generally leading projects, paired up with 2 to 3 writers that they're comfortable working with one designer who's generally a shared resource, and with an additional copywriter who focuses more on, say, email copy or social or things like that. So that's the kind of structure that we have. Those are the kind of pods that we have, and these differ based on the kind of projects we take up, right? So, for example, something might be far more strategic. For one client might not be the kind of need that another client has, where they're looking for more of SEO driven content or very technical content being written there. But yeah, these kind of micro pods have worked very well for us in terms of setting up this kind of a team structure.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I love that. That's interesting to hear that pod structure, because that's very, very common in the startup world, where you'll have like the product lead, and then you'll have like the various other people under it to kind of make everything happen. And then you'll typically have a customer success person in there as well that kind of is connected to the rest of the company. And I really, really appreciate how you've done that, because I imagine that really, really gets rid of a lot of bottlenecks of things being inefficiently handed off to the next department.
Yeah, I mean, it's a young team. It's an energetic team. I wouldn't say young, but definitely an energetic team. And we try to make sure that it's as open as possible and as far away from the, I'd say, the orthodox corporate culture as possible. But yeah, it's worked well for us. It makes sure that folks are very comfortable sort of working across projects, and has generally just... has worked quite well for us and our clients, as it seems.
That's awesome. And then let's say that a marketing agency is listening, right? Maybe it's the founder or somebody on the team. Would you work with agencies, or do you only work with direct clients?
We're actually working with a number of agencies right now. So, and these are different kinds of engagements, right? So for there are, I'd say, engagements where the agency tells us that this is not our specialization. Like, for example, we're more of a consumer marketing agency, and this kind of B2B marketing is not a specialization. Maybe you can help us out with that. So there are engagements like that. And there are engagements where we're essentially offering resources to agencies who are using those, who are using our talent to sort of deliver work ahead to their clients. And in most cases, the kind of expertise they're generally looking for is MarTech expertise, is HubSpot expertise. So they might be looking for folks who can help them just very quickly set up HubSpot emails, landing pages, making sure that everything's A-OK with, say, some kind of A-B testing they might be trying out with account-based marketing that they might be implementing. And essentially that they don't have to hire folks in the US, hire folks locally who are spending a lot of their time just trying to figure out the technology or setting things up. They can just immediately reach out to someone from our team, and we can get that set up in no time. Because just because we're so comfortable with the platform and with the upcoming changes that are coming in the HubSpot ecosystem.
Gotcha. I love that. It's so smart. So yeah, because that is another channel where essentially brings you in typically a consistent lead flow when you kind of work with these partners.
Definitely. Please go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about is you mentioned you're a partner of HubSpot. where, like, how does that impact? Obviously, you can say that in your marketing, and that'll help close deals. I'm sure people do respect that. Does HubSpot send you work as well? Are you able to drum up leads through that? And if so, what does that look like?
We've really explored a lot of channel partnerships. And of course, one of the reasons we got started with HubSpot was because of the sheer focus they have on inbound. To be honest, I mean, yeah, early on, we weren't really focused on the CRM or their specific product. But as we got into it, I think one of the reasons that we purchased HubSpot was that we just listed ourselves for free on their directory as a service provider in India. And we automatically started getting leads. And as we sort of improved our own HubSpot expertise, as we started getting better reviews on our profile page. And right now, I think we're one of the top five rated agencies in India. As that started happening, HubSpot sales rep started reaching out to us as well. So that's something that I think HubSpot really has figured out, is its channel partner network, where even if someone buys, say, HubSpot above a certain tier, it's mandatory for them to sort of get an onboarding through one of their channel partners. And HubSpot tries to pair that up with the best kind of partner that you can for a specific person. So for example, someone who has an enterprise SaaS product and is looking for an onboarding, they'll probably connect to us. And what that has done is that HubSpot sales reps are now not really competing with us. They're also looking to make us more money and give us more business and ensure that we're the reason why these folks stay on HubSpot. So it's been a very symbiotic sort of relationship. And to answer your question, of course, yes, we have been getting a number of leads through the HubSpot team as well.
That's really interesting. I was chatting with a person who uses a completely different software, but another software that sells to marketing agencies. And yeah, they have a similar approach where the software company will, not so much the lead generation, but they'll, because they're just not as well known, but they are basically, they'll actively reach out and they'll help create marketing collateral, and they'll even talk to clients one-to-one. Like, they'll step in into the agency as a team member almost and talk to the agency's clients about the technology if it's needed to kind of like close the deal. Here it sounds a little different in that it almost sounds like HubSpot is like almost closing deals and being like, hey, this person needs help, and then you're kind of coming in with that retention, kind of like you mentioned.
Yeah, and it's, I'd say this has actually been a fairly recent change, because earlier, of course, there were sort of two different kinds of deals, like HubSpot closed deals versus, say, your agency closed deals. But yeah, right now, I'd say that HubSpot's really sort of doubled down on supporting their channel partners. And I'm sure that the experience has been different across partners. Like, I'm sure this is probably not a universal sort of sentiment there. But we've had a fairly positive experience. We've received some really interesting resources from the team as well, in terms of that these are some white papers or things that you can use that can give you a better idea about how to deploy things on the HubSpot ecosystem or just use marketing automation better. And I think a lot of companies out there are also have started becoming a lot more helpful to the channel partner networks because of the kind of revenue and retention that can bring.
I think it's huge.
We're
really entertaining that idea as well, because one of the reasons we sell to agencies, for example, is because the end user of the product typically doesn't succeed if there isn't a person there making it happen, right? But then it's like, okay, what if we go up a level of thinking? What has to happen in the agency to make sure they're adopting, they're successfully selling, they're successfully onboarding and retaining clients, and there's a win-win and a net positive overall in the agency that's kind of easy to access and just from using the software, basically. It's something I think about a lot lately, and it's really interesting to see how these other software providers like HubSpot and ActiveCampaign's a big one, CallRail's doing it. Like, there's so many of them out there, and it's kind of a newer development where there's no playbook for it. Like everybody kind of has their own model. So it's interesting to hear about HubSpot's methods.
Definitely. And I mean, when you're running a product business, the service side challenges are just, I mean, that's another set of challenges that you probably don't want to pick up. So say something like the Salesforce channel partner network, that's far more mature, I'd say, but it has remained, I probably think that it stayed a bit more traditional, whereas a lot of the newer companies are just really doubling down and focusing on leveraging partner loyalty, right? And for a lot of them, it's, from what I see, it's been very successful.
Yeah, I love that. And then so when you're working with a company, let's say they come to you and, hey, we know we need HubSpot. We're ready to go. We know we need content. We want to hire you, right? Are you then, like, do you have special deals that you can get for that client through your relationship with HubSpot? Or are they just going to the website and signing up? Or are you signing up on the account on their behalf? Like, what does that level look like?
So we generally, if we're talking to a lead who's considering HubSpot, we generally register them on our agency portal. And after that, it's essentially, regardless of whether folks go through us or directly reach HubSpot, we internally collaborate with the HubSpot team to make sure that that we get the right kind of essentially credit for it. When it comes to discounting, there are definitely, you definitely have, I'd say, discounting options when you're going through an agency. And even I'd say the HubSpot reps are also, I mean, if you push them a bit, they definitely go for it. But something that is, I'd say, really cool with HubSpot is that they're very comfortable saying no, in terms of that you want to come here and you want to start talking with price first. That's probably not going to get you the kind of discount you want. So I think once you're sure that HubSpot is the kind of, it has the right kind of fit for you and you want to go ahead with that, that's generally when we start the discounting sort of discussion. And definitely, I mean, there are certain options that you'll have as you go with a partner agency in terms of both support hours as well as the net cost of the platform itself. But yeah, it depends on the kind of tiers you're going for, the kind of flexibility that the agency and HubSpot has over there.
That's awesome. I love that. It's a really interesting insight for any existing or up and coming agency entrepreneur to consider, right? There's all these existing platforms, whether it's HubSpot or whatever, like even Salesforce. Salesforce has a massive ecosystem under it, but there's all these opportunities to really specialize, get niched down, and start solving real world problems for real clients by leveraging their network.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of these platform listing sites, and I know that a lot of them probably won't work right off the bat, but yeah, I mean, if I think if you can figure out certain focus networks, right, where, so for us, the HubSpot service provider listing really sort of came through for us. But if you find a certain number of these, if you put out the right kind of content that that makes you look like the kind of thought leader that you want to for a particular technology or for a particular industry vertical, I think that's a fantastic way to go. I think that that kind of branding can really help you in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's great. Awesome. And then, so I'm just keeping an eye on the time here. I know we're getting close to the hour and I know you're a busy guy, so I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I'm super curious. You've already built quite an impressive company. What's your plans? Are you planning on continuing to grow until the day you retire? Are you planning on selling at a certain point? Like, what does the future look for you, look like for you?
So, I'm actually looking to develop the product side a lot more. So there are two things I'd say that have been playing on my mind a lot. One of them has been, as I said, right, the kind of dedicated resource model where I find the right kind of talent for these companies. And our team is in charge of making sure that we're helping them grow, we're upskilling them, we're taking care of their needs back here in India. Whereas they're directly coordinating with the folks that they're hired with. But what that does is it takes a lot of the day-to-day operational headache out of it. And as any agency owner would know, the operations are a huge headache. I mean, even on your best of days, you will have things that might go wrong, where you're trying to fix things on one agency or trying to do something else on the other. And what where the product model really feels a lot more lucrative is in terms of scale. Is that I know that for a fact, if I want to focus on my clients, I can't have more than a certain number of them. Because it just dilutes the kind of impact you can have as an agency. So the product side is something that I'm exploring very actively. I think that's been one of the major sides that we're looking to expand into in the coming, say, 3 to 5 years. Mm. Anything beyond that, we've recently seen huge success. We've grown almost like 150% in the pandemic year itself, surprisingly. So I've been cautiously optimistic and just been focusing on making sure that we get our current growth pains figured out before I look at what the future looks like.
Awesome. I love that. And if you ever want to talk shop about launching a product, be happy to sit down and chat. That's the exact trajectory I went. I built the client agency that was good, great revenue, great margins. And then it was ultimately that issue of scaling, right? It was just, you're just constantly juggling clients and team members to make sure that nothing gets dropped. And I found it very hard to sleep at night. And as kind of the accounts got bigger and the stakes got bigger, right? And ultimately, of course, there's the all new challenges whenever it comes to building a product. I don't know if you're talking about a software product or what, but with software anyways, there's, in my opinion, it's cool because it's like you can still serve specific needs of these small businesses, but it's the ultimate productization in the sense that they can literally go to a page, click buy, log in, and they're off and running without ever talking to a human being.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, making your company work for you, I think that's the dream. And for any service business, I'd say it's way off. I mean, it's really far off. That's definitely one of the avenues we're looking to explore.
Awesome, man. I love that. Well, thanks so much for being so transparent. Before we wind down and close out the show, I got 3 quick fire questions for you. And if any of them don't apply, you can just say pass, okay?
Will do.
All right. So 1, what is your favorite business or marketing related book?
Book. There are a lot that come to mind. So Traction, for example, it's a fantastic book. But I'd say one of the books that I really loved and I read it, I think, in the early part of my journey was Predatory Thinking, which was essentially a guide on how to do better sales. So that was, I think, by Dave Trott. I read it a while back, but I think Predatory Thinking by Dave Trott is a fantastic book.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. What was the title again, sorry?
Predatory Thinking.
Interesting. I'm going to check that out. And I
not
love
the most Traction. Wholesome title for sure, but yeah.
Right. That's cool. And the EOS system through Traction is awesome. We follow kind of a pared down version of that. We definitely don't run the whole system, but there's just some like running the scorecard and the milestones and the rocks and stuff like that. We keep an eye on that stuff and it helps us from a quarter to quarter basis and a year to year basis.
Yeah, I've heard. I've actually, a lot of the agencies I've talked to also follow that. So that's very interesting. It's not something we've experimented yet, but that sounds interesting for sure.
Awesome. 2, are you following or watching any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
In the marketing industry, so Doug Kessler, for example, who runs Velocity Partners, it's a B2B marketing agency. And these guys put out the most fantastic content out there. It's the aspirational brand tone that we want to reach. So I'd say Doug Kessler for sure is one of those guys. Mm-hmm. And Chris Walker is also, I'd say, one of the folks that I'd look at. And again, both of these folks are focused in B2B marketing. Maybe that's a bit too narrow, but definitely I'd say Chris Walker of Refine Labs, I think is the name of his company.
Oh, interesting. There's another guy called Chris Walker, but he's from the SEO side of things and he's quite well known. I thought you were talking about him.
Yeah.
But it's not the founder of Legit, right?
No. This is the this guy's the CEO of Refine Labs.
Gotcha. Okay, very cool. That's awesome. And then number three, what's your favorite business podcast?
I think I'd probably pick Chris Walker's State of Demand Gen.
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely my favorite business podcast. But to be honest, I rarely listen to business podcasts, even though I know I should. Ebooks maybe, but rarely business podcasts. Another podcast I really love is probably Stuff You Should Know by iHeartRadio. And they pick out the randomest, most inane things that happen in the world and just explain why that is the case. So I mean, Stuff You Should Know is an interesting podcast, but in terms of a marketing or business podcast, I'd say State of Demand Gen is a very good, that's a good podcast to follow.
Awesome. I love it. And if people want to find you online, is contentninja.in the best spot to go?
Yes, it is. In fact, if you scroll down to the form, one of the things we did was say that every time someone fills the form, I do 20 push-ups. And a lot of folks have filled out that form just to be sadistic, but it's kept me in shape. So that's definitely helped. So yeah, you take what you can get.
I love that, man. Maybe I'll have to go fill out that form and get you working. But thanks so much for taking the time to sit down. And I've really enjoyed this.
Sure thing. Thanks a lot, Andrew. It was great speaking to you.